Chapter 72. As the acid compound reacted on contact with the salt water, it slowly ate through the timing plate and attacked the barometric pressure switch. The action of the acid on the copper switch soon created an electrical charge that shorted across the contacts and closed the firing circuit. After waiting nearly 5 decades, the detonators at 32 different points around the core of the bomb then fired and ignited the incredibly complicated detonation phenomenon that resulted in neutrons penetrating surrounding plutonium to launch the chain reaction. This was followed by fission bursting in millions upon millions of degrees and kilograms of pressure. The underwater gaseous fireball bloomed and shot upward, breaking the surface of the sea and spearheading a great plume of water that was sprayed into the night air by the shockwave. Because water is incompressible, it forms an almost perfect medium for transmitting shock waves. Traveling at almost 2 kilometers a second, the shock front caught and overtook Big Ben as the vehicle forged across the trench slope only 8 kilometers distant, a good 4 kilometers short due to the vehicle's agonizingly slow passage through the mud. The pressure wave pounded the huge DSMV like a sledgehammer against a steel drum, but it took the blow with the unyielding toughness of an offensive lineman for the Los Angeles Rams blocking a tackler. Even then, as the energy shock and raging wall of swirling silt washed over the DSMV, shuttering all visibility, Pitt felt only jubilation. Any fear of failure was swept aside with the explosion. Relying blindly on the sonar probes, he drove through the maelstrom of sediment on a juggernauting course into the unknown. He was running on a long ledge that ran midway down the long slope, but his progress was only a few kilometers faster than it had been on the steeper grades. Adhesion between the tractor belts and the mud was only marginally improved. Any attempt to drive the great mechanical monster in a straight line became impossible. It skidded all over the slope like a truck on an icy road. Pitt fully realized his life hung by an unraveling thread, and that he was in a losing race to escape the path of the coming landslide. The chance of his being overtaken was a bet no self-respecting bookmaker would turn down. All fear was detached. There was only his stubborn determination to survive. On the surface, unseen in the darkness, the plume of spray rose to 200 meters and fell back. But deep in the fault zone below the bottom of the trench, the shock waves forced a vertical slippage of the Earth's crust. Shock followed shock as the crustal fracture rose and fell and widened, creating a high-magnitude earthquake. The many layers of sediment laid down for millions of years shifted back and forth, pulling the heavy lava of Soseki Island downward as though it was a rock in quicksand. Cushioned by the soft, yielding sediment, the great mass of the island seemed to be immune to the initial shock waves during the first minutes of the quake. But then it began to sink into the sea, the water rising up the palisade walls. Soseki Island continued to fall until the underlying layers of silt compressed, and the floating rock mass slowed its descent and gradually settled on a new level. Now the waves no longer crashed against the base of the cliffs, but broke over the jagged edges and lapped into the trees beyond. Seconds after the explosion and the ensuing seismic blows, an enormous section of the eastern trench wall shuddered and bulged menacingly. Then, with a great thundering roar, hundreds of millions of tons of mud slid away and plunged to the bottom of the trench. An incredible pressure wave of energy was generated that rushed toward the surface, forming a mountainous wall of water below the surface. The indestructible tsunami was born. Only a meter in height on the open surface of the sea, it quickly accelerated to a speed of 500 kilometers an hour and rolled westward. Irresistible, terrifying in its destructive power, there is no more destructive force on Earth. And only 20 kilometers away, the sinking Soseki Island stood directly in its path. The stage was set for disaster. The death of the Dragon Center was imminent. Tsuboi, Yoshishu, and their people were still in the defense control room tracking the southerly course of the crippled C-5 galaxy. 2 missile strikes and it's still flying, Yoshishu said in wonder. It may crash yet. Tsuboi suddenly broke off as he sensed rather than heard the distant rumble as Mother's breath exploded. "Do you hear that?" he asked. "Yes, very faintly, like the faraway sound of thunder," said Koyama without turning from the radar display. "Probably from a lightning storm echoing down the ventilators. You feel it, too?"
"I feel a slight vibration," replied Yoshishu.
Kurojima shrugged indifferently. "The Japanese are no strangers to Earth movement. Every year, more than 1,000 seismic quakes are recorded on the main islands, and a week never passes when Japan's citizens do not notice the ground tremble. An earth tremor,
We sit near a seismic fault. We get them all the time. Nothing to worry about. The island is solid rock, and the Dragon Center was engineered to be earthquake-resistant. The loose objects in the room rattled faintly as the bomb's dying energy passed through the center. Then the shock wave from the shift in the suboceanic fault slammed into the island like a gigantic battering ram. The entire Dragon Center seemed to shake and sway in all directions. Everyone's face registered surprise. Then the surprise gave way to anxiety. Then the anxiety to fear. "This is a bad one," Tsuboi said nervously. "We've never felt one this intense," Kurojima uttered in shock as he pushed his back and outstretched arms against a wall for support. Yoshishu was standing quite still, as if angered by what was happening. "You must get me out of here," he demanded. "We are safer here than in the tunnel," Koyama shouted above the growing tumult. Those who were not holding on to something were thrown to the floor as the shock wave tore beneath the lava rock, undulating the deep sediment below. The control center was jolted more savagely now as the island shifted back and forth during its descent into the mud. Equipment that wasn't bolted down began to topple over. Tsuboi pushed himself into a corner and stared numbly at Kurojima. "It feels like we're falling. The island must be settling," Kurojima cried in fright. What the horrified men in the Dragon Center did not know, could not have known, was that the titanic bulk of the tsunami was only 2 minutes behind the shock waves. With Pit on manual drive, Big Ben slugged tortuously through the mud, sliding ever closer toward the floor of the trench. The tractor belts constantly lost their hold, sending the DSMV sideways down the grade until their leading edges piled up the silt, dug in, and regained their grip. Pitt felt like a blind man driving the tractor in a blind world, with only a few dials and gauges and a screen with little colored words to guide him. He weighed his chances, sizing up the outside situation as it was revealed by the sonar laser scanner, and came to the conclusion that so long as he was still mired in sediment, his only escape was by a miracle. According to the calculations by the geophysicists, he had not traveled nearly far enough to escape the predicted reaches of the landslide. Everything depended on finding firm ground or rock structure that was stable and would resist tearing away from the wall of the trench. Even then, his toughest hurdle was the trench itself. He was on the wrong side. To reach the safety of the Japanese shore, he would have to drive the great vehicle down into the bottom and up the opposite slope. He did not see, his scanner could not tell him, that there was no hard ground or shallow slopes for the DSMV to claw its way up to flat terrain. If anything, the great fracture in the seabed deepened and curved southeast, offering no chance of escape for over 800 kilometers. And too late, his scanner revealed the mighty seismic landslide flaring out across the eastern bank of the trench, much as sand spreads when falling through an hourglass and closing in on him at an incredible rate of speed. Big Ben was still battling through the soft ooze when the avalanche caught up to it. Pitt felt the ground slipping away under the vehicle and knew he'd lost the race. The sound of it came like the roar of a cataract in a tiled room. He saw Death's finger reaching out to touch him. He just had time to tense his body before a great wall of mud engulfed the DSMV and swept it end over end into the black void far below, concealing it under a burial shroud of featureless ooze. The sea looked as if it had gone insane as the mighty bulk of the tsunami towered into the night, forming a raging frenzy of destruction. It sped out of the darkness, rising ever higher as it came in contact with the island shoals, the sheer magnitude of its power beyond human belief. As its front slowed from friction at meeting the rising bottom, the water in its rear piled up, lifting with fantastic speed to the height of an 8-story building. Blacker than the night itself, its crest bursting like fireworks with the fire of phosphorescence, its roar slashing across the sea like a sonic boom, the mammoth nightmare reared up like a mountain summit and flung itself against the defenseless island's already sunken palisades. The stupendous wall of death and devastation crushed and swept away every tree, every stick of organic growth, and the resort buildings above the island like toothpicks in a tornado. Nothing made by man or nature resisted the catastrophic force longer than an eye blink in time. Trillions of liters of water obliterated everything in their path. The island was pushed under even further as if by a giant hand. Much of the tsunami's astronomical power was sapped from the onslaught against the landmass. A countersurge was created in a kind of backlash that sent the major force of the wave back into the vastness of the ocean. What energy was left of the westward thrust passed on and struck Japan's main island of Honshu, the wave having dropped to a 1 meter coastal surge that caused some damage to several fishing ports, but no deaths. In its wake, the tsunami born of Mother's Breath left Soseki Island and its Dragon Center drowned under a turbulent sea, never to rise to the surface again. From deep under the island, the aftershocks went on. They sounded like the rumblings of heavy gunfire. At the same time, countless tons of black water gushed through the air vents and elevator shaft, pressured by the enormous weight from above. Rivers spurted from fractures opened in the concrete roof and by widening fissures in the overhead lava rock from the stress forces brought on by the sinking island. The entire Dragon Center was suddenly filled with the noise of water cascading from above. And behind that noise was the heavier, deeper thunder of water exploding into the rooms and corridors of the upper levels. Impelled by fantastic pressure, the flood plunged into the heart of the complex, shoving a great blast of air ahead of it. All was confusion and panic now. The full realization by the hundreds of workers that they all faced certain death came with sickening suddenness. Nothing could save them. There was no place to run to escape the inundation. The tunnel had been split apart as the island shifted downward, sending the sea pouring through the tube toward Edo City at the other end. Tsuboi's ears rang from the air pressure. A great roaring sound came from outside, and he recognized it as a wall of water ramming its way toward the defense control room. He had no time to react. In that instant, a sudden torrent of water burst into the room. There was no time to run, to even shout. In his final moments, he saw his mentor, the evil old arch-criminal Yoshishu, shot away from the column he was clinging to like a fly from the spurt of a garden hose. With a faint cry, he disappeared in a rush of water. Rage dominated all of Tsuboi's other emotions. He felt no fear of pain or death, only a rage directed against the elements for denying him the leadership of the new empire. With Suma and Yoshishu gone, it would have all belonged to him, but it was only the fleeting hallucination of a dying man. Tsuboi felt himself being sucked out and swept into the flow of water rushing through the corridor. His ears stabbed with agony from the pressure. His lungs were squeezed to the bursting point, and then he was thrust against a wall, his body crushed. Only 8 minutes had elapsed since Mother's Breath had exploded, no more. The destruction of the Dragon Center was terrifyingly complete. The Kaiten Project no longer existed, and the island the ancients knew as Ajima was now only a mound beneath the sea.